we had 60 different processes from the time that the phone rang until we collected the check at the end of the job. That was the day I fired the business coach. I restructured the whole company. We 100% used subcontractors.
Do you feel you should be further along in your contracting business? Are you tired of not making the money that you know that you're worth? Or maybe you're winning, but you just want to win at a higher level. I'm Tom Reber, and this is the Contractor Fight. Turn this shit up and get ready to earn more respect, earn more money, and be a better leader in your business. Oh, and P.S., this show is not for thin-skinned people. If you offend easily or have a victim mentality, you should probably just move the fuck on right now. Let's go.
All right, fighters, several years ago, I connected online with this dude named Ryan, and we gotten to know each other a little bit over the last few years. And today I just thought, he's a painting contractor. I just thought, man, this is a good dude to have on the show. He's doing a lot of cool things in his business, a lot of cool things in the world, been through a lot of ups and downs. And guys, that's really what the Contractor Fight is about, right? It's fighting the battle between our ears, that 6 inches of real estate or so that are between our listening devices. And so anyway, I invite you guys to hang out with Ryan and I here today on the Contractor Fight podcast.
Ryan, what's up? Are you wearing a Penn State Nittany Lion hat?
I am wearing a Penn State Nittany Lion hat, although I am not a football fan of Penn State. So
you're a baseball fan, aren't you?
I'm a baseball.
Yep. You're a baseball guy, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
See, I recognized it as a football hat, even though it is technically a baseball cap.
Yes, but, sir.
You know, so anyway, why are you wearing Penn State, man? What's up with that?
You know, it's going to sound crazy. When I go out to do estimates in our area, which we don't do too much any longer, and we'll talk about that.
Yeah.
It was such a talking point. Everybody loves Penn State around here.
Yeah.
It just opened the door for me. I could care less about Penn State, even though my stepson went there, but it just opened up the door to me saying, oh, how do you know about Penn State? Who went to Penn State at your house? And then it just put me right in the door.
So where's here? Where do you live? Tell people where
I'm in Pennsylvania, in the Lehigh Valley area. I'm right on the border of New Jersey and Pennsylvania.
There you go. And so for those that don't know you, what do you do? Who are you?
Great question. So I come
gotcha.
From a, let me look up. I come from a family who just were all painters. My great-grandfather was a painter. My grandfather was a painter. My father and all his brothers are painters.
Yep.
So when I was, you know, lost in high school and hated school, except for music, I was into music. I was in the band and the marching band and jazz band. I didn't know what to do after high school. So
what
else to do but go fill nail holes for my dad during the day and sand and all the crappy jobs that nobody else wanted to do. And I just went from there. Still didn't know what I wanted to do. Had a son who you met mm-hmm. last time.
Yep.
And I joined the Painters Union in New Jersey.
Okay.
So I started from there at the bottom again as an apprentice. I started running large scale work in my second year of being an apprentice. And I loved being in charge and kind of scheduling and sequencing. And I spent 18 years there until right about after 9/11, the unions kind of switched and they started using the cheapest labor they possibly could use. And
yeah,
it wasn't worth me driving that far anymore. So I started my own business.
And then from there was all sunshine, rainbows, unicorns, and pots of gold, right?
So it's
so,
yes.
So I want to back up. I want to back up a minute because I didn't know this. What instrument do you play?
Saxophone, alto saxophone.
Okay. All right, man.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Good deal. Well, I play drums.
So oh, awesome.
I'm not a jazz guy though. I'm like a rock guy, you know, rock and funk and blues. And
I like everything. So you'll hear me listening to classical music and then I listen to rap music. So I like everything.
Yeah. We have everything on in the home here for the most part, except rap. So
yeah.
Every now and then you'll hear it, but not for me. All right. So you spent all those years in the union. It was funny. You're like, yeah, you know, I grew up family of painters. I'm like, shit, this is like my family. Cause my grandfather, my uncle were painters. And I was putty and nail holes since I can remember, sand and woodwork, plastic in houses, all the windows getting ready for prime. Like they'd send me with a roll of plastic and a staple gun and, you know, they'd drop a ladder off for me because I only had a car.
Same thing. You know,
and I'll tell you, for those of you guys that know what I'm talking about here that had the plastic houses and stuff, something happened around 1993-ish. I don't know. That's when it seems for me where like the companies that would send we'd get plastic from the 16x100 stopped tearing easily. Do you know what I'm talking about? Like, yes. It was like right around the early 90s that I remember, and my uncle would come in and he would laugh because I'd be in there going, motherfucking God, God. And I'm like trying to rip the plastic because it just, they used to have the little seams and you just go and it'd rip, staple it up, no problem. And then something happened in the plastic universe that fucked it all up.
And you'd cut yourself with that blade because I would rip the safety off of the blade because it wasn't cutting correctly. Yep.
All right. So you've made a lot of transitions through the years. And so I want to have you on and just like our goal here for every episode is to just help people walk away with something to help them be a little bit stronger in their business. And so how have you changed the most over the past few years? What are some things that come to mind? Maybe you personally or mindset or business, like what are some things that you've made some shifts in that have been super beneficial to you?
So we started out probably like everybody else. I didn't know what I was going to do. I started my own business. I was going to go paint. I'll paint a bedroom here. I'll do a bedroom there. I'll do it on the side. Mm-hmm. I'll do it for cash. It didn't matter. And then it spiraled very quickly where we went from, you know, me and my father to me, my father, my cousin. And now we had 20, 25 employees mm-hmm. on payroll with payroll taxes, with all that goes along with that, workman's compensation, and all the other bad things that go along with having employees, training and whatnot. So we did it quite successfully for a while, and it started to for us, rear its ugly head with trying to find painters that wanted to stay here long term, that had a goal in mind and wanted to have a career and wanted to absorb the training we were giving them, trying to manage them every day.
Yep.
And making sure that they're working their 8 hours a day or whatever it would be, trying to find the supervisors that would be watching those painters. It was getting to be just a money pit, honestly. So we brought in a business coach who personally I loved. It just took our company into a different direction. We had them come in one day and go through all of our processes. And this is not a knock on them at all. I know a lot of people use them.
Yep.
And love them. They put all the processes on a board in front of me. And I was sitting there with our key people in the office. And I looked at the end and we had 60 different processes from the time that the phone rang until we collected the check at the end of the job. And I thought, boy, if I can't understand all that, there's no way that Tanya sitting next to me or Mike or Kyle,
right,
is, let alone going to understand it. But why would they care to follow 60 different processes? I'm just making their jobs 10 times as hard as they should be.
Yeah.
And I was looking at a company. It was a very strange feeling. I was looking at a company like I was watching TV. It was just not what I wanted to do. It had nothing to do with me. It wasn't my company. And that was the day I fired the business coach and I restructured the whole company. We went slowly to using subcontractors to now we 100% use subcontractors.
You know, it's funny. We talked about this before. You and I came from that mindset many years ago that you got to have employees, and I'm not knocking having employees. I have employees right now. And so I think both are right, and I think it just depends on you and what your definition of success is for you and your business and the type of life you want and things like that and the pressures, and because they both have pressures. Mm-hmm. They both have pros and cons. But I just want to own my crap here to everybody, that there was a time when if I had a competitor that was using subcontractors, I did whatever I could to kick their legs out from under them in the sales process, you know, and talk and point to all the reasons that it was bad and things like
same,
that.
Same here. I had to throw away so much marketing material that just said, we only use employees.
Yeah. And what I came to realize, and one of my other business partners in our sales academy, Steve, he coined this for me many years ago. I would rather make an easy $1 than a hard $2. and there was a, you know, the pressures of, you know, when you look at, and I coach guys to do this too, who have employees. So I'm not like, I'm just saying, like, I think both are right. And I just want to have you on and talk about this a little bit openly here today, because I don't think it's fair to be closed-minded to the other camp if we're talking about that. But, you know, when I would look at the, wow, to hit my goals, we have to do 23,000 production hours a year at this rate and whatever, like whether you subs or employees, you still got to sell work. But I just think there's something to be said for when you find a subcontractor in any trade who they have their shit together, they got their own people, they're responsible for their production rates, they're responsible for stuff. You just have a great relationship with the owner or whatever it is. I mean, shit, home builders have been doing it forever, right? And so there's pros and cons to self-performing. So let's get into that a little bit. Like you were... all employees, you've made the move to all subs. What have been the biggest benefits to your business since then?
Number one, to me personally, it has reduced so much stress. The stress of wondering, you know, why is this 16-hour job taking 32 hours and we still have to go back and touch it up? And I have to pay for it.
Yeah.
Or is Mike going to show up on Monday morning to do his job? Mm-hmm. It fixed and corrected the scheduling almost instantly.
Yeah.
Because like you said, you're still going to have problems. We still have problems with subcontractors, just as you have problem out and with anybody in the world. Mm-hmm. Not everybody is a harder worker as you or the other painting contractors that you deal with.
Right.
Or me. Number one, fixed stress, reduced stress so much. It corrected the schedule. It enabled us to do what I feel that we're best at, and that is marketing and the sales process. Mm. We just were not good at managing the day-to-day stuff, and I had to realize that. It just was not our strong point.
Yeah.
So we hired people who are good at that. They weren't good at the marketing. They weren't good at the sales work. They weren't good at getting their own work. And they admitted it. And they've been the best subcontractors. They just want work and they want to manage that job and make sure the customer's happy. I mean, they were the three key things for us that kind of changed our company and reduced my stress.
Yeah, it's really about you being freed up to focus on what you do the best, which is what you just said. It's like in the business coaching world, most business coaches don't make money. and the number one reason is most true wake up in the morning, can't wait to dig into spreadsheets with people and coach and all that. Most of those people have a hard time with the marketing and the sales portion of things. And so I totally get that. You know, I'm a terrible, so go back to my painting days. If I didn't have a really good business partner who was great at managing the field and the crews and the scheduling, things like that, I would have failed miserably. That was his strength. And so we used employees, and later on in the years, we used some subs on specific occasions and things like that when we needed to scale up quickly or whatever. If it weren't for him, none of that shit would have worked with employees, because I'm a terrible manager. Like I'm a visionary. I want to sell. I want to market. And go do my thing. I don't want to babysit and some things like that. And so what would be some of the, because I also know guys that feel like they're babysitting their subs. So what are you doing to set this relationship with your subcontractors up for success?
So we sat down together, Tanya, who I speak about here and there, she's our, mm-hmm. she's been with me from the start. She is, you know, we kind of do everything. It's, I wouldn't say that, you know, Ryan's the estimator or Tanya's the project manager. Tanya's the admin, project manager, interviewer, troubleshoot. She's, you know, does everything. So mm-hmm. we sat down together and we just listed, you know, all of our expectations that we want and expect from these subcontractors. You know, what are our pain points, that we're just not going to deal with? One of them is showing up. I mean, it sounds crazy, but you still have jobs where, you have these subcontractors or employees who I need work. We have work. Okay. You can start it on Tuesday. They accept the job and then something happens.
Yeah.
They're sick. The car breaks down. So it still happens.
Yeah.
But we go over that sheet. We read it to them, you know, face to face, that we expect you to show up on time. We expect you to go back and fix your own work. Mm-hmm. Or this is what's going to happen. We're going to hire somebody else to come and finish your job.
Yeah.
And back charge you for it. So there are no questions. Everything's on a sheet of paper that they sign.
Yeah, totally clear expectations and things like that, like an agreement, like you would with a homeowner or whatever, right?
So exactly.
Tips for vetting them. You know, what do you do to personally make sure that you're not putting some schmo out on some property?
So go back to Tanya again. I'll get a text message. I got one the other day that said, hey, I just had a phone conversation with this subcontractor and he was so nice. It was a great conversation. I wanted to reply, you've told me this, you know, 50 times before, and then they don't show up or they disappoint you in some way. So it sounds simple, but it's our process is put them on the job, watch them very hard that first day, mm-hmm. watch them harder the next day, and then a little less as we go on, and fire them very quick. That's been the key, that you can't let them at that job too long and keep giving them second and third and fourth chances, mm-hmm. because they're going to really muck something up for the client and your name.
I had several instances in the past where I put the wrong guy in a job and I very quickly started basically saying, here's the process to hire a sub. And it involved us going out and physically looking at some projects that they had completed, but also talking to the customer. Like, hey, Billy and his team did the work for you. We would call him and Billy wouldn't be in the room. We'd pick the phone up and call him, go, hey, we're looking at working with Billy. How was the experience? Cause the, you know, the paint job or whatever you're building could be great. But if that experience is like, yeah, they were a mess and they were this and it took twice as long, then I don't want to waste my time with them, you know? So but there are really good subs out there. A lot of guys are like, oh, there's no good subs. And I'm like, well, I was a good sub. You were a good sub. Mm-hmm. You know, if you ever did builder work or remodelers or whatever it is. And so I want to encourage people, like we said before, there's no right here. It's what's right for you. There's no right or wrong. I think you got to pick your poison or pick your pain a little bit.
You know, I think you mentioned that experience and that's what I wanted to get back to. We had totally lost that experience. It was just a big machine that was running every day, every minute, you know, money coming in and money going out. And none of it in that transition was going in my bank account. It was a big revolving door to feed this machine. I wanted to get back to the experience for the customer that you know, from the time they call us until the time the job is over, that they can remember back. And we did everything we possibly could do to make them happy. Yeah. Whether the job went good or not, by the time we were done with it, it was good.
Yeah. So one of the knocks on subs or using only subs is that you don't build a good culture. You don't, you know, have that family feel and things like that. What's been your experience with that?
That was true in the beginning, because we were treating them as a commodity, honestly, until we sat down together in the office and it wasn't the right feel. We wanted to get back to treating these people, letting them know that we really are grateful for what they do. Without them, we wouldn't be able to do what we do. So it's going out to the jobs and looking them in the eye and telling them that we're thankful for what they do. They do a great job. Letting people know when we post pictures that, you know, Tim did this job. He did a great job. calling them up on the phone, showing them the great reviews that we got. So it was definitely a struggle at first, where it was Ryan, Tanya, and my son and Kyle.
Yeah.
And then all these subs had nothing to do with us. It was just the mindset in the office. I had to do it myself for everybody around me. Sometimes you forget.
Yeah.
Because you're probably like me, Tom. It's, you know, you're creative. You want to get things done. And sometimes I forget to say, hey, Preston, yeah, you did a great job making that video for us.
You get so involved feeding the machine. You know,
right.
And there's personality types here too. We're like, we're just boom, moving on. And yeah, I find that you can still have a monthly meeting with your subcontractors. I coach some builders and remodelers and stuff. And I'm like, if I'm you, I'm having a monthly meeting with all my subs. I want my painter to know my drywall guy. I want my drywall guy to know my floor. I want them to be as much of a unit as we can create here. Because that's going to make them cover for each other when they need to. And like, you know, the more you get to know somebody, right? Mm-hmm. And so the companies that have done that the best, they have like a subcontractor of the month award, you know, where they give them a little bonus. One builder I work with, he goes out on the job sites and he'll have $200 or $300 in his pocket in 20s. And he'll just walk to the subs guys that are out there at the job site and be like, dude, that looks phenomenal. Or I really appreciate the way you clean that up over there. Here's 20, man, lunch is on me. Like, awesome. And just those little things like that where, you know, so I just think it's just like it is with employees. It's got to be an intentional thing to create that sort of a culture that's rooted in gratitude and,
mm-hmm.
And
for me, that's hard.
Yeah.
So that's just not my personality. And mm-hmm. you know, to everybody we're talking to.
Because you're an asshole, Ryan. So it's tough.
Well, I learned my lesson. I lost a lot of good people that were with us.
Yeah.
I mean, if I could go back in time and, you know, take, you know, Jeremiah back or Carl back or all these great people back, we would have an astounding company. But
yeah,
it was because we were feeding the machine every day and I wasn't as grateful as out loud as I should have been.
You know, I think we can all say that, though. You know, I've burned through some really good people. All right, fighters, $100,000 a year is not too much to ask. Listen, when our parents were younger, $100,000 was a lot of money. When I was growing up, $100,000 was a lot of money. Today, it's barely enough to get by in America, especially if you're a business owner. You got a lot of responsibilities. Everyone's got a handout, man. You got your subs, your employees, your vendors, your customers, your family, the doctor, your lawyer, the IRS, the state. Everybody wants a piece of the damn action, and quite frankly, the bills are never going to stop, okay? Sadly, most contractors just think, I got to work harder and harder and harder and harder to make more money, yet you're putting in all this time, putting in all this effort, and you're wondering, why am I still at 50, 60, 75 grand a year when I'm working my ass off? Listen, that's where I wanted to share with you guys a resource that we have, a kick-ass program called the 100K Contractor. Guys, this program is designed to do just that. It's to get you as a contractor business owner to at least $100,000 a year in personal income. All right. So I want to just share this domain with you guys because listen, at the end of the day, you deserve it. Your family deserves it. It's time we quit stealing from our families. We've got a lot of cool stuff inside the 100K Contractor. So if you go to thecontractorfight.com/100K-contractor. You can see what we got going on. We've got a couple of videos where things get explained and get you guys set up on the right path toward your 100K personal income. You guys rock. I want to switch gears for the last few minutes here.
Sure.
And we kind of just been talking about the sub thing, pros and cons and whatever. One of the things I know you're good at is this whole marketing thing. And so I would love for you to just spend a couple minutes maybe sharing, not just with painters, but we got everybody that listens to this thing, but you know, you do a great job of doing things in your community and branding your business and stuff. And so I would just love for you to share a few minutes for somebody who might be struggling, you know, getting consistent leads coming into the business and stuff like that. What do you tell that person?
you have to keep at it. You have to also forget about, you know, taking a picture of that nice room you did. Those posts and all that content about your work is great. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would still keep doing it, but people want to know about you. They want to know about your painters, or your carpenters, or your guys building the ponds or pools or whatever you guys do. I want to know the story. I feel a lot better when I'm hiring people to be around my house. When I see they have a video blog, or I can see who the owner is, or the people who are going to be around my house, I want to know that they can talk about what they do in an educated way. I want to mm-hmm. I want to hear their story. I want to hear about their family. I want to hear everything. So we just made it a point to just, you know, it doesn't have to be professional. Just take your phone out and start videoing what's going on. You know, take a picture of a guy painting the front door of somebody's house. Our best jobs have come from the oddest videos where, you know, every time we put so much effort into it,
yeah,
and we think it's going to be great, nobody cares. We took a video the other day. I was at one of our floors. We do epoxy floors as well. I was taking a video of Kyle, and I said to Kyle, can you tell us how much patching you would do on this floor in a normal epoxy floor? And I threw him aback a little bit. He didn't know how to answer it. Yeah. And he him and hawed. And finally, he just answered it honestly. And he said, I don't know. He said, it depends on the floor and how long you'll get out of this floor. And I got so many great responses that they would hire us just from that video alone because he was being honest.
Yeah, it wasn't bullshitting anybody.
It wasn't bullshitting anybody. So that's my advice, is to be real and just, it doesn't have to be polished and perfect.
Yeah, you shared about, you know, a guy painting the front door or whatever. It was way back in the day when Facebook was still like just coming out or whatever. And I think I got on there with the business a little bit. And I remember taking a picture of one of our crew leaders in the backyard with the homeowner. And I came around the corner and I said, smile. And I just snapped a picture. And they both just looked at the camera and just smiled. And it was just a nice spirit. It was a nice spring day. That one stupid impromptu picture got the phone to ring like 12 times in the week or whatever it was. And it was crazy. And all I put up there was, one of the things I love about our painters, and one of the greatest compliments we hear all the time, is they're just really fun to be around. And it was that simple. It was like, there was no big marketing plan behind it. There was nothing. And that's where I'm always telling guys, you know, I'm telling guys, like, guys, just be real, get on social, be real. You know, and like your guy, he was real and people appreciate that. What else are you doing to build your brand that might be surprising to somebody listening here?
I think a really good tip that has really helped us is to have a podcast and locally interview the people that you want to work for. It's so simple. So, you know, if I want to work for that facility, go find the facility director or go find the operations manager or the owner. I mean, not many people are going to turn you down to be interviewed. I mean, everybody wants to talk about themselves. There's going to be some.
Yeah.
But you might not get work right away, mm-hmm. but when they think about painting or carpentry work or whatever that you guys do, they're going to remember the guy who sat down with them or girl and interviewed them. I mean, that's been the best for us. Our best jobs come not right away. It's like we're feeding them. And then bam, 8 months down the line, here comes this awesome job we got because we did an interview, or I spent time giving them some free information on painting.
You know, that's setting you up as the expert, right? You're the expert of everything going on in your community. You're bringing these business owners together. You're picking their brain, exposing them to the world. And in return, you're top of mind. So that's totally, I forgot that you actually, I mean, I've been on your show, but it's funny that you view that and you use that as also a marketing tool for the painting business. So
one of our best jobs came from giving away free information. So don't be afraid to do things for free. I think karma plays a good role in everybody's lives. We did, I went out to an estimate. It was for a gentleman whose mother just passed away. and they had to rip. It was one of those houses that was all wall covered. So yeah. They wanted to rip all the wall covering off and do that whole spiel and priming and painting. And by the time it turned out, it's an expensive process. So yeah. It was out of the budget for them. They were selling the house. I told him exactly how to do it, what products mm-hmm. to use. Little did I know, he was an architect. And 8 months later, he gave us, I think it was a $65,000 job for a health club that he was building just from doing that.
Yeah, that's you add value to enough people, it comes back to you. And that's one of the things here in the fight. Like one of the comments that we get a lot is how much stuff that we give away for free with the podcast and the YouTube channel and, you know, our social media stuff and this and that. And I'm like, the info's out there anyway, right? Somebody could go online and find an article that, you know, Angie's List or somebody wrote on how to remove wallpaper or whatever it is. But so the stuff's out there anyway. I just tell people, like, if you want to move faster, then you can work with us. But the shit's out there. You just got to implement on your own and whatever. In your case, I mean, I think back, you're sharing about the wallpaper thing. You know, one of the first blogs I wrote a million years ago was how to remove wallpaper. And that one blog about a year later led to, you know, this $20,000 project or whatever it was, because this guy's like, he literally said to me, every time I go on Google to ask it a question about painting or wallpaper, you show up and you offer all this advice. And I just figured you were the ones to hire when I needed a bigger project done.
Exactly.
And it was that simple. So it was just, like you said, it's that karma that you're putting out there.
And it's not right away. It's not like instant gratification. So you have to put the work in.
Absolutely. So what, as we get close to wrapping up here, what's something I should have asked you that I didn't ask you, or something that we should have talked about?
That's a great question there. I'll look up.
Again, that's an inside joke with Ryan and I, everybody, just see.
We were talking about boring guests and I was wondering how does he handle that? He answered honestly. You know, I have a question for you, honestly, is we're trying to hire a salesperson and it has been a complete struggle.
That I think that's one of the hardest things to hire. Well, you never asked a question. You just made a statement. So,
I've went back and forth. We've tried to hire just as an estimator who has experience. Mm-hmm. And then I went with, okay, you don't need any experience. Mm-hmm. Commission only, then salary with commission. Got nothing. Now I'm trying, because everybody's out of work, to hire a salesperson / project manager. And I've got a lot of applicants, not a lot of experience in the painting industry. So real quick, my ultimate goal is for me to get out of
all right. I think you just put a job ad out on the podcast right now in the area. So that's a start. You know, it's, this whole salesperson thing, it just depends, right? It depends on the strength of the company. It depends on the goals of the owner. It depends on who you already have working in your business. You know, we did this and had success with it, where we ended up taking one of our crew leader guys, one of our foremen, and started giving him weekend appointments. And the next thing you know, he moved up and was a full-time sales guy. I think another thing is learning how to, and again, this is not a shameless plug for our Contractor Sales Academy, but when you really learn how to pre-qualify, it cuts down on the number of running leads you got to run around on. We trained our crew leaders how to upsell, and if they hit the budgets of the job and things like that, you know, hit the man hours and this and that, then they were eligible for upsell bonuses that put more money in their pocket. And we had guys making another grand a month in their pocket just because we taught them a few things to open their mouth with. You know, one of my friends and clients, you know, they're about a $1.5 million business, and $500,000 a year is upsells from two other foremen out of that. And so I think there's ways that you can increase the sales. And then, cause here's the problem with a lot of people don't understand. And I know you do, cause you know your numbers and stuff, but it's like, if I'm the only sales guy, the leads that are already coming in and I'm selling, that money's paying me, right? And the business. And so if you're going to go and make somebody prospect, generate some of their own leads over time, one side of that is you got to have salary to pay for them. The other side is you're going to have to increase your marketing budget to get additional leads in to give them. Or if they're 100% commission, well, then you better have a shit ton of leads that you're putting their way, you know. Yes. And so again, it all comes down. I think there's all these different factors, but I would start with, you know, can I coach up some of the guys I already have and somebody who's they want to eventually hang up the tools and you know, I always tell people to start there before I run out and hire a salesperson. That and just making sure you're whether you do our academy, not you or whatever, but it's like pre-qualify better. And this is where content on the website can help. Somebody schedules it. We used to do this way before our pre-qualification stuff. Like we'd have our pricing on our website. Somebody like schedule an appointment for next Tuesday or something. We'd shoot them a link and go, hey, we're excited to, you know, talk to you about your project. Here's here's some info that might be helpful. And probably half the people would cancel the appointment based on the blog post of what it would cost. And I think that's a win. So again, it cuts down on the amount of,
And I totally agree with you. And, you know, I'm not a client of Tom's, but, he's been giving me free information for years now. Actually you made a video about hiring a salesperson. I think you just actually explained everything that was in the video just now.
Yeah.
So, doing everything virtually now for me is 200 times easier than running out to people's houses.
Yeah.
So I definitely think it's a process that I could teach somebody here.
I mean, dude, when I run the numbers, I run the numbers with a lot of people that we work with or whatever. And when we go, what's it going to cost to hire the sales guy? The time to ramp them up and get them trained, the additional marketing we have to spend to get the phone to ring. Cause like, listen, if I'm paying myself over six figures as the owner, the leads that are coming in and stuff are paying for that. Right. And so, and you don't want a sales guy that doesn't want to make at least six figures because he's not going to be hungry enough. Right. Well, you got to reverse engineer how many leads are we going to need and what the closing rate and all this other garbage is. So my point here is oftentimes when you look at how this whole thing plays out for the average contractor who says, I want to hire a sales guy. I always look at what is the end of the day additional gross profit that's going to be kept in the business. So if a guy goes out and sells $500,000 and you know, you got 250 grand of gross profit, you paid him 100 and you paid, you know, X amount for leads and blah, 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 blah. Oftentimes you'll find that there's only like an additional 50 grand or 30 grand or whatever it is of gross profit. Or profit left in the business. And so then I just go, okay, before I go and hire that guy and ramp all that shit up, I go, well, what are a couple small moves that I could make to just put another 30 grand in my pocket this year? It might be, you know, increase the job size by 3% month over month. It might be, you know, lower my overhead by 3%. And it might, you know, 5% more leads a year instead of 200% more leads. Or so I think that's why I say it depends, you know. And I know there's people out there that are experts at, you know, hiring sales reps and stuff. And you see them like a lot of the roofing guys and the storm chasers and things like that. And they, you know, to them, it's just a big leads game, you know, there's a painter in my area here. They use all that, home mag stuff and Valpak and they sub everything out, which is great. But, I talked to one of their former sales guys and they're just like, we just know that if we get, you know, 1,000 calls a month, we're going to sell this much work. We charge whatever we want. And it's just a big numbers game. And so then you can afford to pay a sales guy commission. I said, well, what's the problem with the company? It's funny. He goes, we don't have very much repeat business, you know, because we just have this grinder boiler room mentality of going out and just writing jobs. And we're feeding the machine, you know? So it's, I don't know if that answered your question at all, but it's like, I don't know, man. I think you got to get clear on what is the net result that you want from hiring a salesperson. Sometimes it's, you just don't want to do sales anymore and you're not good at it. And I get that. And so you just got to run the math and go, okay, how am I going to continue to pay myself? This is where knowing your numbers comes in. Am I going to continue to be able to pay myself what I need to make in order to bring somebody else on and give them the sales? I think there's huge value in having other people be able to sell. I mean, you can go on a vacation, you can take some days off. You don't have to, you know,
yes.
Your business is sellable, more saleable, whatever you want to call it. You know, there's a rule of thumb a million years ago that if you want to sell your business someday, you shouldn't be doing more than like 20% of the sales personally. You know, so I get it. Like, there's massive value, but I just think it just depends on what the goal is.
And the goal is really to get myself out of it.
So it's not so much to scale.
No.
Yeah.
No, not at all.
Right. So then maybe look inward first to your team. You know, who's, you know, who can take. And one of my buddies just did this over the course of 3 years. He 3 or 4 years, each year he had a goal that, like, he was doing 100% of the revenue. He never hired a sales guy. The second year, his goal was to dump 25 or 30% of it to his guys of the revenue. And then he just, over the course of, you know, 3, 4 years or whatever it's been, he's now doing 25% over 3 years, but he got it there by investing in his people, training them, role-playing with them, supporting them, taking them under his wing. But, you know, and they were happy to do it because, you know, they're putting some money in their pocket and, you know, making that commission and all that good stuff.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that's the goal.
There you go, man. Well, good shit.
Cool. Thank you.
Well, Ryan, you mentioned a podcast. Well, let's do two things. If somebody wants to know more about you and your painting company, they want to come sub for you, work for you, sell for you, you know, whatever. Where do they find you there? And then tell us a little bit about your podcast.
So if you want to check out our company, you want to work for us, come check us out at RyanAmatoPainting.com. Everything's on there. You can find us there, and our links to our YouTube channels on there and everything else. We also have our podcast at AmatoPodcast.com, and it's eclectic, so it's going to be all over the place. I do love the painting industry, so we'll be talking to people in the painting industry, but we also talk to celebrities. So I just talked to Mario Andretti. We talked to independent music people, sports. I'm into sports and baseball, as maybe you can see behind me. So,
yep.
I mean, just interesting people you'll find.
Dude, that's awesome, man. I didn't know about Mario.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's sweet.
He lives 5 minutes from here.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. Well,
good deal. I'll have to go check that one out, man.
Absolutely. Please do.
Good thing to hear. So, all right. Well, we will put all the links in the show notes for everybody. Guys, appreciate you hanging out here today on the Contractor Fight. Ryan, you rock, man. I appreciate you being here.
Thank you, Tom. And I really appreciate it. I mean, you bring so much value to me. I can never pay it back to you.
Well, you don't need to. That's a cool thing. So I'm just glad we're helping, man. And glad to know you. And I appreciate you being here and helping the fight, man.
Absolutely. Anytime.
All right. You guys rock. We got to roll. Rock us out with those guitars, Travis and the gang. And we will see you guys next time on the Contractor Fight.
Want some fight swag to wear? Simply share this episode of the Contractor Fight anywhere on Facebook or Instagram using the hashtag #JoinTheFight. And our team will pick one winner each week to recognize your help in spreading the fight message.